here with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So in early spring, when temps get below freezing at night and above freezing during the day, sap hits the prime time. We're checking in on the season since sugar maple sap flows for only about 5 weeks. Do you have a favorite region to get syrup from? Do you notice a difference in syrup depending on where it's harvested? What do you like about it? What do you want to know about how First Nations harvested and used maple syrup? We're at 800-642-1234. Elena Terry is executive chef of Wild Berries. It's a nonprofit she started in 2018 to keep First Nation food traditions alive and help people in her community who are dealing with trauma or addiction. She's a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation. Elena, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you.
So help us understand the importance of maple syrup for Wisconsin's First Nations.
Well, maple syrup really is a pure form of sugar that we used to use to sweeten. We use it for candies, for cooking, and also for ceremonies. It's considered a medicine.
For medicinal purposes, how was it used as a medicine?
Well, the live enzymes that come from the tree directly before it's cooked, and just when the sap comes out, it's almost like a probiotic.
How have First Nations in Wisconsin traditionally harvest syrup from maple trees? Is it different than how we're harvesting them today?
Well, yes. I mean, we didn't have quite the same tools. So we did make some spouts out of other trees and be able to put those in there. And then we often used baskets, like a bark basket from birch, to collect the sap underneath.
And then how was the sap boiled down into syrup?
Well, we did have containers, special containers that were used to boil. You know, even as recent as a couple hundred years, we've been using cast iron. Oh. And now some of the larger production sugar camps will use a dehydrator over an open fire.
And what are these sugar camps like? What happens there?
So these sugar camps are amazing, and I actually have family that does as traditional as possible for a sugar camp, where they build a long lodge in the woods, and people will come and stay for days and help collect the sap, and it really is a time to get together after the winter, the long winter, where everybody's a little bit more isolated, and to have some socializing, and then also do the sap collection, which is a really tedious job if anybody's ever done it before.
And so they're sharing stories. They're doing what you describe as some tedious work, but there's a lot of community, a lot of heart in that.
Absolutely. And nobody's shy about coming over to help. So although it is very labor intensive, doing it for a couple days and helping is not. So it's a great way to build the community. And then to visit, yeah, to kind of come together after a long winter and enjoy the sweetness of life and this amazing gift that the trees have to offer at this time of year.
How are you getting the young people involved, the next generation, to know how to do this process?
It's something that we just automatically do. Like when you go to sugar camp, you bring your kids with. And it's something that they really look forward to as they start to realize that it's that time of year again. And I think it's true not just with the sugar camp, but with everything. Like we also are talking about what we're going to be growing this coming year. And it's just kind of getting ready for everything to start waking up and getting the kids into that timeline. It's not something taught. It's something that's just inherently done. You know, with the families.
It's almost like this time of reset and kind of getting our bearings after, like you mentioned, after the long winter. We're discussing Wisconsin's maple syrup harvest with Elena Terry. She's founder and executive chef of Wild Berries. What questions do you have about maple sugaring? Do you tap maple trees for sap? Are you a maple syrup producer? Or do you just love maple syrup on your pancakes? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Grant sent us an email and wants to know, Elena, are there other types of syrups made from trees in Wisconsin that are produced and sold in Wisconsin?
Well, there are other trees that are tapped, and some of them are used. You can benefit from like a box elder tree, which has a much more floral essence to it, but that is good. A couple of friends of mine are making box elder vinegar out of that syrup after they cook it down. So there are other trees that can be tapped, birch also, but of course the most universal one is maple.
And is there a difference in taste with sugar maple versus maple?
There is a difference in a lot. And it's almost like when you're accustomed to tasting a certain kind from a certain harvest, there's so many factors that can affect the taste of the maple syrup in the end. Absolutely. Like even a different tree next to each other, if you were to isolate that sap, would taste slightly different. But regionally, in northern Wisconsin, it'll taste a little bit different than in southern Wisconsin. And some of that is just the soil and the environment that the trees thrive in. So, yeah, if you are accustomed to having it and tasting it, I think that you can decipher the difference. But otherwise, I mean, maple syrup universally is delicious. So I don't know that there's too significant of a difference. They also do have the different grades and color. So from a lighter to a darker would have a more intense flavor.
How is maple syrup graded? What are these grades?
So I'm not exactly sure about the grades. I know that amber is, you know, a little bit darker and it's a little bit more intense. And you can have the lighter ones that have obviously a lighter essence and are a little bit less thick in consistency. So it kind of goes up the scale. But I'm not sure what decides the grade because we don't really go by graded unless I were to purchase it from a processor.
Elena, let's look at sustainability. Can you take too much sap from a maple tree actually harming the tree?
Well, there are ways that we kind of rotate what trees we tap and how much we tap because we want to make sure that they have what they need to thrive as well. But when right now the sap is really flowing because of the, you know, the temperatures and the amount of water that we were able to have, there's a lot of factors that affect that. So right now is a good time to be plentiful about it. But if there have been years where there hasn't been a lot of sap available, and we just kind of make sure that we respect that the trees need those nutrients and, you know, that we're not going to have a huge harvest that year. So there are ways that we definitely rotate the trees that we tap and how much we take from them.
What do you see out of the harvest this year?
It has been an amazing year this year.
Oh, great.
A lot of different trees that are running. So it's been definitely plentiful. And I almost think that it's kind of to the point where people are just, you know, ready to not be processing anymore, and then you give it back to the tree.
they just had, the trees have so much to give. Was it the temperature changes this year, or what was that sweet spot?
Yeah, I think so, because it was very, very cold, and then it got warm enough, and then it got a little cold, and then it got warm again, and I think that just kind of triggered it, because after the second warm spell, the trees were really flowing.
Elena Terry runs a nonprofit that works to keep Native food traditions going. She's a consulting chef with the Intertribal Agriculture Council and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation. On Sunday, there was a planned maple syrup pancake breakfast at the Ledgeview Nature Center in Chiltern, but it has been canceled. But the Phelps Maple Syrup Fest is still scheduled for April 4th, where you can see tree tapping demonstrations. Are you Native American and use maple syrup in your cooking? Share your recipes with us. Are you concerned about sustainability in your maple trees? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Elena Terry here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about maple syrup here on the Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It takes about 40 gallons of maple sap from the trees to make 1 gallon of pure maple syrup. Season is short, but harvesting maple trees to make maple syrup is Wisconsin tradition. We account for about 6% of maple syrup production nationwide. Have you tapped a maple tree with your family and friends? What do you like about the tradition? How is your harvest going this year? Is it plentiful? Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Elena Terry works to keep Native American food traditions alive, and she stays with us. Elena, tell us about your work with your nonprofit, Wild Berries. How are you keeping these food traditions alive?
Well, Wild Berries really is a community outreach and educational program that works with tribal members and beyond, because we do have some Wild Berries that aren't tribal members. And we go out into the community, and we love to cook and share a meal with our communities and then the outlying communities and educate on indigenous ingredients.
And what might those ingredients be in the recipes that you cook?
Oh, we do a lot of maple syrup because it also does have a low glycemic index compared to obviously white processed sugar. So we do like to use that, especially in our desserts. But we use everything from ancestral squash to hand-harvested wild rice to wild game in our cookery. And it's really just reintroducing these amazing flavors that we have in our, you know, daily life into our homes and getting them utilized more frequently, not necessarily promoting a decolonized diet where we're saying, you know, you can't have chicken, flour, or some of those other things. But we're saying if you can share some wild rice or, you know, some bison on a daily basis, that would be wonderful. And so that's what we're just trying to promote, getting those ingredients back into our homes.
How have those flavors been lost in our homes and those food traditions? Is it the time it takes to prepare, or is it something else?
I think the time definitely is a contributing factor, but, you know, maybe 50 years ago, it was out of convenience, and it almost was a status after the Depression to be able to go to the grocery store and purchase something. And I think that just kind of being in a larger community made it a little bit more difficult. But now there's been this wonderful revolution and re-interest in the flavors. And I really do believe that it brings back memories of childhood or stories from your ancestors. And it's a connection to history by using these ingredients. And I think with the way things are today in our world, growing your own food is, you know, one of the best things that you could do for your family. So we promote seed saving and growing out these ingredients as well with our participants.
Elena, who taught you to cook?
So for as long as I can remember, I've been interested in food, and I loved spending time with my grandma, my great grandma. And I didn't even realize when I was younger that my grandma didn't have a pet turtle, that she was just one of the ones in our community known for her ability to process turtles.
Wow.
So I never realized that it wasn't like the same one that she had. But that is one of our ancestral ceremonial foods. And so she was really well known for it. And so as long as I can remember, it was something that we did. And I never actually thought of it as, you know, something other than life.
Yeah. Wow. And so she really passed that tradition down to you. We're talking about maple syrup this hour and food traditions with Elena Terry, founded a nonprofit focused on Native American food traditions. How do you incorporate maple syrup into your cooking? What's your favorite way to use maple syrup? Do you have family recipes or tricks? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Elena, you had mentioned that you are swapping out maple syrup for refined sugar. How is the difference there? Because there is the issue with diabetes that has hit Native communities especially hard.
Yes. And so Maple does represent, like, to me personally, the sweet things in life, and I think that using anything in moderation would be okay, but for something like squash, it's a perfect complement to that, to make something that normally can be very savory into a sweet, delicious treat, or even as simple as adding it to your oats or to wild rice with berries. That's a real traditional way that we use it, and it's very simple, but it's so incredibly delicious. And it does affect you a little bit differently because there are still those enzymes that are in there, and the way that your body reacts to it is significantly different than, you know, a chemically processed white sugar. Consistency does, you have to make a little bit of accommodations for, say, maple sugar as opposed to white sugar, but it's not incredibly different.
Walk me through what you do with squash and where the maple sugar, the maple syrup comes in. When do you put it on? How are you preparing your squash?
So that's a little bit different. Like with squash, if I were to roast it, mm-hmm. I would probably add a little bit to it. And then you can always add more when you're blending it or with whatever you're doing. But even with just roasting, say, an acorn squash, adding a little bit in brushing the edges with it, it really does absorb and complement that cookery. And it almost makes it into like a squash candy.
I was going to say, does it caramelize it a little bit?
It does. It does. And it's absolutely delicious. It's one of my favorites. And it's so simple just to be able to appreciate the natural flavors and ingredients and enhance them with a little bit of like the trees. You know, you can use this wonderful resource that you have to enhance this already amazing ingredient, and you don't have to do a lot more, and it doesn't have to be thoroughly processed and, you know, chemically treated for you to get these incredible flavors that come out naturally from them.
Alina, have you tried using your maple syrup in any types of beverages or types of drinks?
Absolutely. When I was in Pokagon, Michigan last year with the Intertribal Food Summit, we had made a challenge was made about soda. And so we actually made some simple syrups out of sassafras and maple syrup and then just combined it to some, bubbled water and made our own kind of indigenous soda. But it's all about, like what I said, getting those ingredients and those flavors back into your home in a way that's relatable so that you do want to continue doing that. So yes, we definitely use maple syrup.
So did that have like a, almost like a root beer type taste to it?
It was. It absolutely was a root beer.
Did it work out? Did it taste good?
Yeah. It was more flavorful than any root beer I've ever had in my life.
I love it. I love it. So, you know, as you do the process, as you go back to this tedious process of the tapping and the boiling, can you take us through that boiling process and what that is like, boiling it down?
Sure. So, for example, my family that does do it traditionally in a longhouse, we use buckets that are tapped on the trees and we walk them to a main path and kind of set them up there. And then everybody grabs a bucket and walks it up the hill to the lodge. And there's different stations, kind of like different fireplaces inside that lodge for different phases of cookery and different heat levels. So one whole side of the lodge is loaded with wood. And then there's three different fires and you start with the pure sap and then it gets to the middle cookery. And then the last one is like a little bit longer, lower, so we can control it and not burn any of the sugars that are there. So as it moves on, we just move it down the line of, you know,
different fire production line.
It is. And we have a giant sanitized rain barrel at the beginning that we just kind of feed it and then we move it along. So it's wonderful. It is a long process, but if I could just take you there, you're in the woods and you get to smell the fire, and then you smell the sugar, and you hear the sounds of everything waking up. It isn't really tedious. It's actually beautiful, and it's something that people long to be a part of, to be there, to be in the conversation and doing the work. And it isn't too hard if it's, you know, a couple days that you spend there. It's actually really invigorating and I think that it just wakes up your senses and it wakes up, you know, your body. You have to do some outdoor labor. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to kind of, like I said, enjoy the sweetness that life has to offer and the company and the community that that builds.
I hear so much peace in your voice.
Yes. It's a wonderful place to be.
Well, Elena, thank you for sharing it. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Elena Terry works to keep Native food traditions alive. Her nonprofit is called Wild Berries. You can hear more from her this afternoon at 3. She joins Central Time as their Food Friday guest. She'll be talking about her work with tribal food sovereignty, preserving the seeds and plants traditionally grown by the Ho-Chunk Nation, and a chef mentorship program she's starting. Elena will have a couple recipes to share as well. That's coming up at 3 on Central Time. Just ahead, we check in with the Wisconsin Maple Syrup Producers Association about the season, about regulations, and do-it-yourself tapping in your own backyard. We'll be back with more Wisconsin Weekend after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a quick heads up on our programming plans. Join us tonight at 7 for a special report from NPR about COVID-19. This report will focus on what we have learned about the virus as it affects us personally and as a country. We learn about the science behind the virus and how it spreads. We'll also hear about how individuals and schools and workplaces and healthcare industries are responding. That is all tonight at 7, all about COVID-19, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we are talking maple syrup. Wisconsin is one of the country's leading producers of maple syrup, trailing Vermont, New York, and Maine. Vermont produced more than 2 million gallons of maple syrup last year. Wisconsin, we produced about 270,000 gallons. Have you ever wondered how to tap a maple tree or what equipment you need to do it? Do you have a family maple syrup recipe you can share with us? We're all ears, 800-642-1234. Teresa Barone is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Maple Syrup Producers Association. Teresa has been making maple syrup since she was a kid on her family's farm in De Pere, where they tap about 1,100 trees for syrup. Teresa, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Well, I understand this year it's hopping. It's a really good season. Is that the case for you?
Yes, we are in the midst. We're about halfway through the season. Yesterday, we had our greatest collection day, 1,100 gallons of sap, which is very good. So many people are out in their sugar bushes collecting and cooking sap away to make maple syrup.
So it's a really good year for Wisconsin producers then. We're the fourth largest in the nation. How are producers doing? How are they making it here in Wisconsin?
Many people in Wisconsin here, we have quite a few backyard people that tap 4 or 5 trees via pails or a food grade container of all kinds or bags they can use. And then there's many people too that also use a tubing method. A tubing method is a little bit easier, usually a person with more taps. There's someone here in Wisconsin that is up to 60,000 taps.
Wow.
And they tap on a tubing system, so all kinds of ways.
So you can tap a tree multiple times and have multiple taps running?
Yes. So when a tree is about 10 inches in diameter, you want to put one tap in, 20 inches in diameter, 2 taps, 30 inches, 3 taps. You don't want to put too many taps in the tree. Each tap hole should give you about 10 gallons of sap from that tap hole, meaning you should get about a quart of maple syrup, you know, depending on your sugar content and stuff. But on an average, from one tap hole, you should yield a quart of maple syrup by the time you cook it down.
And when do you drill that tap?
So usually you drill when the weather starts freezing at night and it's above freezing during the day. Here up in De Pere, we started tapping the middle of February. Usually up north, it's about 2 weeks from then. You want to tap when it's above freezing because you don't want to hurt your trees. So you want to tap when it's like between about 32 and above, especially if you're tapping not on the tubing system. So
How far do you drill in? When do you know that you've drilled far enough?
Okay, you want to drill about an inch and a half to inch and three quarter into that tree, because actually your sap is made in the first, or is in the third layer of the tree. So you don't want to go too far in, because you're not, it's not like the sap is in the center of the tree, it's in that third layer.
And then as the tree ages and you add more taps, does the tree get more productive, or are there years where it yields less?
It all depends on Mother Nature.
She is in control.
Yep, she is in control. And one thing nice this last year, you know, many of us did not like the rain, but for maple producers, that put more moisture in the ground. So you should get a bigger sap yield with all that moisture compared to when there's a drought. It seems the sap yield the next following year is less.
So beyond the weather, are there other challenges that maple syrup producers face?
Well, I would say animals getting into your, attacking your tubing system, squirrels and deer. Same thing in your pails. People face that. Many years with the changes, I think, in the regulations has affected some producers. I guess I can say the state really wants to make sure you're making your product in a clean facility and make sure that you have everything to state statutes when you're making a product, once you're putting it on that store shelf, to make sure you're putting the finest product on the shelf you can.
We're talking about maple syrup, and there's time for you to join the conversation. Teresa Barone is Executive Director of the State Maple Syrup Producers Association. What questions do you have about tapping trees, the one in your backyard, or cooking sweet treats, or the harvest here? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Teresa, you grew up collecting maple sap with your family. What do you remember about collecting it as a young child?
We started collecting with pails. All our stuff was on pails. I remember carrying those pails of sap up the hill, falling down with the pails of sap. I have a large family, so it seemed as our family got bigger, we added more trees. And still to this day, if you want maple syrup for my family, you need to come out and help at our sugar bush to get that maple syrup.
So they have to have some skin in the game here a little bit.
Yep.
How have regulations changed? Because you talk with producers as part of your role heading up the association. What do producers say about how Wisconsin regulates this industry?
I think when it comes to regulations, some have been good for the industry. What the state wants to do is looking to do is when it comes like to grading maple syrup. So for the consumer, when they know they buy a thing of amber syrup, they're buying a thing of amber syrup in Vermont to Wisconsin. They're buying the same color, same taste of that syrup. And I think, too, with the regulations, it's just to make sure people are getting a product made in a facility that is clean, that you're not using any allergens in your products. One thing about sap takes on any taste that you put the sap into any container. Same with maple syrup. If you put your maple syrup into a non-food grade container, it can take on that taste. So I think that's why the state is really looking into regulating stuff. And they still, here in Wisconsin, if you sell under $5,000 of maple syrup and you're only selling at a farmer's market or face-to-face, you do not need a license to sell it, but you do need to register with the state that you are selling it. But,
yeah.
So they're not cutting down on the small producers on that aspect. Just as you get bigger, once it's on the shelves, they want to make sure, you know, it's being made in a good environment.
Well, let's bring in a call now. John is with us from Menominee this morning. Hi, John.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, so I just wanted to share that our family has been enjoying maple syrup for many years, and we always buy it from the same sugar bush, the same person, and I know him through work, and he comes in every spring, and this week he said, John, how many quarts do you want? And we tried doing our own one year, and I really enjoyed collecting the sap, and when it came down to cooking it down, we didn't quite get the same consistency and product and such that we had enjoyed, and so that part of it wasn't as exciting for our family, but I understand a lot of families do have great traditions around that. And then we've also had it used kind of as a form of bartering or currency in our neighborhood. I have a neighbor who brings some sap or some maple syrup over and cuts firewood for campfires around their house on some property I own. And I even had a person one time, I live on the river, and he ran out of gas on the river with his boat, and he had his kids in, and I gave him some fuel for his boat motor. And a day later, he came driving up the driveway, and his family has a sugar bush, and he came up with a quart of syrup. So
what a wonderful story. John, thank you so much for sharing those stories. It's fabulous. Teresa, John has a supplier, and he's also used it as a good neighbor as well.
That's great. Yeah, there are so many producers around the state. And one thing I notice about maple producers, everybody's good-hearted. You know, they're good people, so...
That is
people.
Yeah.
joke.
Well, it sounds like John has found great neighbors there. Thank you so much for calling in, John. Teresa, you know, John mentioned this can be a really finicky process, and John tried it out. It didn't work well, didn't taste quite right, and it's better to find someone who can get it right. Is that a good approach?
I think so, because, you know, the rule of thumb is, with sap is if it's boiling, it's spoiling. So the quicker you can cook it down, the better you're going to get quality syrup. And it seems that, you know, if you have to wait, you need to make sure you refrigerate it or freeze it or just keep it cool. And it takes such a great amount, as we all know, to make that sap into 1 gallon of syrup. So, yes, I agree. There's so many different changes in the industry that they're making smaller hobby evaporators that does make it easier for a smaller producer to produce that sap in the syrup.
We're talking with Teresa Barone about maple syrup production in Wisconsin. She's executive director of the Wisconsin Maple Syrup Producers Association. Shout out to Maple Fest that takes place in Lake Geneva on March 22nd. There's Maple Syrup Days March 28th and 29th at Ware Nature Center in Franklin. Be sure to check event listings, though, before you go in case of cancellations. Do you tap maple trees or want to know how to start? Where do you go to get maple syrup products in Wisconsin? Who's your supplier? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment with Teresa Barone here on the Ideas Network. It's Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're going around the state talking about maple syrup production. There's the Maple Sugarin Festival at the River Edge Nature Center in Saukville on the 21st. There is Maple Fest at Glenna Farms in Amory featuring sap to syrup tours on the 28th and 29th. What's your experience in producing products like maple syrup? 800-642-1234. Teresa Barone heads up the Wisconsin Maple Syrup Producers Association, and she stays with us. Let's go to George in Red Cliff. Hi, George.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just called in to make a comment with regard to the history of the Ojibwe Nation, the Chippewa people here in northern Wisconsin. At the turn of the century, we were producing tons of maple sugar, near 40 tons annually from Red Cliff and also the Bad River Reservation. So we have a big history of maple syrup and maple sugar. My family's been producing syrup for centuries, and we turn a lot of our stuff into sugar. which is more applicable to cooking and storage.
George, how are you involved in the process today?
Tap trees, cut wood, boil it down, and we boil it over an open fire. And what we use is old oil drums that we've sterilized, burning them and heating them up, and been using the same drums for 50, 60 years already.
Oh, wow. What a process. What a tradition. Teresa, what do you make of that story?
Yes, that back in years, even at Daniel Boone age, maple sugar was a way for trading. And I give a lot of credit to all those people that still make maple sugar. It's such a hard process compared to making maple syrup. It takes so much longer to cook that down. And really, it is great for cooking as well.
How much longer would it take to make the sugar versus the syrup?
I would say 4 to 5 hours to get it to that temperature.
Yeah. Wow. Let's bring in Ray now in Oxford. Ray, hi.
Good morning. How is everybody today?
Doing well. What do you make there?
I have a small woodlot, and about 5 years ago, my son gave me a sample of walnut syrup, which was fantastic. Same as maple syrup, same processes. I've got about a dozen walnut trees that I tap. They start flowing about a week before the maples actually start flowing. And same process, it's about 38 to 1 on a boil-down process. And over the course of the last 4 years where I've made it just at home myself, I've developed the same three-step process. The sap on the top of the fire to warm it up. Then as that condenses a little bit, I transfer it when I strain it into another container. And then the boiling container is the one that's right above the fire. A couple of those serving trays that you'll get at a deli or a buffet, stainless steel serving trays like that over an open wood fire. And it's a nice way to spend about 6 hours on a Saturday. Boil down my syrup for the week. The walnut has a little bit sweeter flavor, and my son's family, they use it on, like you mentioned, the squash, and she mixes it with a lot of the foods that she serves to my grandchildren.
Oh, I bet, and it's wonderful.
And they love it. You know, it was surprising. My grandson was only 3 years old when I bought up some maple syrup or some walnut syrup, and Daddy was telling about Grandpa's bringing some walnut syrup. Well, he has a white chalkboard, and he spelled out the word walnut when he was only 3 years old.
that became a priority for him. I love the story, Ray. Thanks so much for calling. Teresa, we're about out of time. Are there any final words you can tell us about how much of a community you have here?
Well, I would say my last words would be go to www.wistmaple.org. There's information about getting beginner books and learning about how to make maple syrup, and go out to your events. Hopefully some are still open with all this stuff. And I know there's many producers throughout the state would love to have people come in.
Well, Teresa, thank you for joining us.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Teresa Barone, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Maple Syrup Producers Association. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about one family's tortilla-making tradition.
Many of us have strong memories tied to making food with our families. Writer Araceli Esparza shares a poem about the bonds that are nurtured while making fresh, fluffy tortillas from scratch.
She gets the flour. She gets the flour and the salt. She gets the flour, the salt, and the water. Hungry for my cloud tortillas. Waiting feels like a year. The water, the flour, and the salt in a bowl. She begins. Hungry hunger rumbles in my tummy. She folds in the parts of my cloud and tells the dough how much I will love what it will become. Pitter-patter, thump-thump, Everyone comes down the stairs. And now we all squeeze in to watch Josita, Tommy, Lupita, and even little Juanito. On the table, she rolls a little ball of masa. Will I get my own? Then she centers the masa ball on the tortilla press, pulls down the lid, and presses hard. Pat, pat with her manos. 5 kids watching, waiting. Will I get my own? Smack on the comal on the stove. Dale vuelta, tia. Give it a turn, tia. We whisper, shout. Little Juanito begins to whine. My cloud tortilla dream begins to evaporate. Couple of turns and browning. Bubbles form. Will they burn? My cloud tortilla was done all fluffy, light, and warm. Tia asks, who wants the first tortilla? Everyone answers, me, 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 me. But I say, yo, por favor. Tia gives me the puffy treat I've been waiting for, and I float to the ceiling. I spread a butter moon on top of my tortilla, but I see little Juanito, and I roll it up and give it to him, and I show him how the cloud eating is done.
That's Madison writer Araceli Esparza sharing a poem about making tortillas. I asked her why she wanted to write about food and her family.
I remember as a small child, like, going up to New Berlin with my great aunt and my grandmother and my mother and, like, all of us driving up there to visit her. They've known each other for so long, and, like, just her cooking and, like, the flour tortillas, oh my gosh. I never seen somebody, like, make them by hand. So when you go in Mexico, you typically see corn tortillas made in a machine, a tortilla, right? And so, but to see the process done by hand and then just the, it was so methodical and just so yummy. Oh my gosh, just like a slice of heaven.
So what have tortillas meant to you in your life?
You know, when I think about all the debates that's happening right now and what can bring us together, people often say breaking bread. Let's break some tortillas together, right? We can have country tortillas. We love our street tacos. Let's talk about that more and, like, let's talk to each other while we're breaking tortillas, maybe. I have tons of little tortilla stories about, like, one time I, like, you know, when you have an electric stove, like, okay, so I get kind of picky of how to cook them. Like, a gas stove tortillas are just so much better than an electric stove, right? But sometimes, okay, with the electric stove, you have to really watch when you make them, and they can come up actually rubbery and hard. And so there's this anecdotal moment that I remember clearly with my grandmother, and I had an electric stove, you know, I was living in apartments and stuff, and, like, I make her these tortillas, and, like, she takes a bite and, like, literally throws it at me. Like, this is not quality, girlfriend. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she's like, I've taught you better. And I'm like, I'm dealing with an electric stove, abuelita, you know? This isn't, there's not a gas stove here.
Araceli Esparza is a writer based in Madison and host of the podcast Midwest Mujeres. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Tortilla, tortilla, necesitas una tortilla. Tortilla, tortilla, necesitas una tortilla. Si quieres una quesadilla, necesitas una tortilla. Si quieres un taco, necesitas una tortilla. Si quieres una tostada.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on the morning show. What's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.